Windfall, Pennsylvania is the estranged sister city to Sherwood Anderson's Winesburg, Ohio. Its country cousin, Yaknapatawpha County, with family resemblance to Weldon Keyes' Depression-era fictional Nebraska town of Weston, or even Edward Arlington Robinson's Tillsbury town. This gritty fictional town links all the stories in Eric Shade's first collection, Eyesores, which last year won the University of Georgia Press's Flannery O'Connor Award for short fiction. We all know Windfall, run down, full of lovable and not so lovable losers, the interstate, which most inhabitants have called the new road for over a decade, passes it by. Of course, there's a wrong side of the tracks, but it's hard to know which tracks are wrong. He writes, to go across town from Old Station Street to the overpass at Highway 91, you have to cross six sets of them. So the town is like a stash of old scars that overlap. We cross all those tracks. We cross them and go back, but rarely have to wait for a semaphore, although there are plenty of trains, few budge from the shopyards. D.H. Lawrence once told us, never trust the teller, trust the tale. But from the first story on, we trust Eric Shade as a teller of tales. His stories are told in clear, colloquial prose, and when his characters stretch into more figurative language, it has the honest ring of working-class poetry. He writes again, Whip Delmar was so short, I thought I could jump up on his shoulders and sink him into the earth like a spade shovel, the narrator tells us in the title story. And later, Penelope had dimples you could suck out with a cocktail straw. If for no other reason, we trust Eric Shade because no matter what spectacular, stubborn losers inhabit these tales, the author never pretends to know more than the characters. He never moralizes, never condescends. After a few stories, we too become fascinated with the stuck lives of Windfall. By the end, like Shade and his characters, and as we feel about our own hometown, we both renounce it and fall in love with it forever. Please welcome Eric Shade.
Is it in the right position? Can you all hear me? First, I want to thank Duff's and River Styx, and especially Richard, for making arrangements to bring me here. And I want to thank you all for coming as well. If it sounds like I'm trembling, it's a little bit of nerves, and I'm also really cold. I woke up in Houston, Texas this morning. It was 65 degrees. Anyways, the story I'm going to read is from the collection. It's called The Last Night of the County Fair. Before the county fair, the nearest I'd ever seen Don, my stepfather, get to a cow was when he ate a sirloin steak. He thought choice meat on his plate made him look sophisticated, though we lived in a pure crap part of Windfall, a hill of spoiling homes near Muleshoe Bridge that peered down on the old railroad shops. Don was a civil engineer, a theorist. All my friends' dads were blue-collar workers, bricklayers, roofers, mechanics. They wore shirts with their names embroidered on patches. Emmett Brown, who lived across a steep street, was my best friend. His dad drove a big rig. For some reason, people called him Hobo. He threw things at the TV when the Steelers got a bad call, Iron City beer cans, pretzels, and once, the day he was supposed to take us to the fair, a small plastic egg with a tail that he dug up from the couch. It cracked against the screen, landed, and started vibrating. Emmett jumped over to the egg and switched it off. He turned away from me, the back of his neck burning red, and went outside. Wait till I tell her that I found her pussy rattler, Hobo said to me. He stretched his arms out and made a buzzing sound. His veins bulged as if stuffed with purplish roots. I looked into his eyes, old blanket blue on strains of tomato pink. Yins, take and drive up there yourselves. He got up, handed me his car keys, and stumbled drunk into the bathroom. Neither of us were old enough to drive, but tonight was the last night of the fair. Emmett knew a girl who was supposed to be there with a friend. I went outside and gave him the keys. Should we go? I asked. We spent a few minutes angling slate chips through a tire swing. The air was crisp and the stones sizzled in it. We heard the phone ring inside his house. If you drive, I said, I'll go. He threw another slate piece. Somewhere in the pile was the egg. Emmett had tossed it when he thought I wasn't looking. Hobo called out to us. It had been my stepdad on the phone. And Hobo had told Don that we had the keys and were going to drive ourselves. Of course, now I was supposed to go home. My mom was talking to me on the phone as Don explained to me why I couldn't go to the fair with Emmett, who waited for me on the front porch listening through the screen door. Then Mom came out of the kitchen. "Don," she said, "why don't you drive Darren and Emmett? I'm subbing tonight, though. You have to be back by 11. My mom worked as a part-time nurse. She wanted us to be home by 11 so that we wouldn't have to send my sister Abigail to my aunt's place. Abigail hated it there, and so did I. Everyone in the house smoked, and there was never anything to eat. "Okie dokers," Don said. "I'll take the boys up." Okie dokers, I thought. I hoped Emmett hadn't heard Don use that word. I went back to the front porch. "I bet your real dad would have let us go," Emmett said. "Maybe, maybe not," I said. My real dad lived in West Virginia. I'd only seen him a few times in the last 10 years. He was a house painter. That's all I knew as far as his biography went. Don I knew a little better, though it's more accurate to say that for a long time I felt like I only knew of him. He was born in Windfall and for some reason had gone to college in New Mexico. My mother met him at a church-sponsored dance. Me and Abigail met him a few weeks after he proposed. They honeymooned in Ocean City, and then Don moved into our house from his apartment, and for a long time we didn't talk. In fact, that trip to the county fair would be the longest time we'd ever spent together. Me and Emmett had gone places with his dad before, and Hobo always let us do what we wanted. At the same time, he wanted us to leave him alone. Probably we were all three looking for the same thing when we went out, girls. We felt sick on those occasions when we saw Hobo with other women. They were tired-looking, with only inferences of a beauty that had become pockmarked and saddled from long hours of work and smoke and drink. They were the kind of women Don would call slutty, and maybe they were. None of them was as pretty as Emmett's mom, and maybe that was part of the understanding as well, that he could only mess around with women who weren't as pretty as Violet, and there were plenty of women like that. As we drove to New Germantown, Don talked to us about the highway we were on, Highway 91. He claimed to have had a big hand in designing it. I told them when they got to Boot Jack that they'd have to go around that mountain, but they started hacking into the rock face to save money, and they ended up being over budget. I told them I'd help. That's what people need to do, is accept help. He started talking about international relations. Then he told us about a guy he knew who died because he wouldn't let anybody help. "What if I need help fixing a transmission?" I asked finally, trying to challenge him. "Well, you get help. Can't be afraid to ask." He hadn't understood my point, which was that I couldn't ask him about it because he would have no idea. I guess Emmett understood what I was getting at. Just the month before, his dad had let us help him work on the Monte Carlo. "Are you trying to make me look like an idiot?" Don asked. He glanced at me in the rearview mirror. I was trying to make Don look like an idiot. I thought it would cheer Emmett up. I wanted him to tell me about the egg. I thought I knew what it was, but I wasn't sure. At the fair, Don paid for all three of us. Emmett got his hand stamped and said, "Thanks, Mr. Harlenberg." "We call Emmett's dad Hobo," I said to Don. "People used to call me Sergeant," Don said, "when I was in the army." I took off my flannel shirt and tied it around my waist. The night was about to go rotten. We'd only just arrived. It was about 7 in the evening, deep, cool August. We stood inside the entrance, Don looking like a golf pro with his silver hair blowing and his hands in the pockets of his pressed green slacks. "What do you want to do?" I asked him. Don laughed. "You guys go have fun," he said. "I'll just look around. But we have to meet back here at 10. With that, he turned and walked away. I wanted to ask if he could give me a few dollars, but hesitated and ended up borrowing from Emmett, who had $8 his dad gave him. And I let Don walk away with probably 30 or 40 in his pocket. I needed help and didn't ask for it. Emmett and I looked around for his girl. I kept wondering what Don was doing. Maybe he was looking for girls, too. Maybe he was looking for boys. "Are you worried Don's going to see us goofing off?" Emmett asked me. "No," I said. "I'm afraid we'll see him goofing off." We went over by the Ferris wheel and saw two pretty girls. "There they are," Emmett said. We walked over and said hi. I met Emmett's girl, Julie. Emmett kissed her. "He's cute," Julie said. "This is Anita." Anita had on a short blue halter top that showed her stomach. She said hi. We kind of shook hands. I tried to smile. I could see a trail of cheerful little brown hairs going down into Anita's pants from her belly button. She had light brown eyes, hair dyed blue-black. God, my parents are so embarrassing, she said. Her voice was raspy, like she'd swallowed a raw corn cob. We took them on the Ferris wheel. As Anita and I got into our car and the bar was pulled down, the wind blew her dark hair into my eyes. It smelled like peanuts. She held my hand as we started to go up. We looked down at kids who stared up at the balloons they had tied to their wrists. Game vendors taunted losers out of another dollar. A man dropped a plastic bag filled with water and a goldfish. When we reached the top, I put my arm around Anita's shoulders. I looked behind her head at my finger on her bra strap. We looked out over the greater distances of the fairgrounds, striped canvas tents, in lines for the tilt-a-whirl and zombie shack. Emmett and Julie were in the car in front of us, and they started making out. Anita said, big deal. I wanted to kiss her, but I didn't want her to think I was trying to do it because they were doing it. Her hand was in mine a few inches below my waist. I was hard. I was embarrassed. Her hand was beautiful and slender. She had a scar on her wrist. We got off the Ferris wheel and walked around. Emmett and I were trying not to spend money, but we didn't have to. The girls were camping just outside the grounds and told us they had a tent and snacks and a bottle of peppermint schnapps. So, Anita said, squeezing my hand. In those few seconds of silence, before either Emmett or I followed up on the proposition, Don walked out of the men's room, tucking his shirt into his pants. He looked at me, looked down, then walked past us and looked up once more and smiled at Anita and me. His fly was down. Do you know him? Anita asked once Don was out of sight. I told her that he was my stepdad, that he had driven me and Emmett up here. Anita looked carefully at me. You must be rich, she said. Julie was biting her nails. She spit a piece on the ground. So you guys want to come and get messed up? She asked. Come on, Darren, Anita said. Your dad will never see you in the campgrounds. Stepdad, I said. We walked across the fairgrounds to the camping area, and all four of us got into their tent. I took a few sips of schnapps and felt sick. I'd never had anything stronger than beer before. Julie turned on a little radio and a flashlight, which was balanced on a cooler. She and Emmett started kissing again, and then they got up and went outside. I was nervous. I took a few more gulps from the bottle. When I put the bottle down, I bumped the cooler and the flashlight fell down. Anita put it back. She sat next to me. Her mouth was soft. She opened it wide and pushed her tongue in my mouth and all over my lips, my chin. I put one hand under her top. I skimmed the other hand over the hair on her belly. Lower, I reached the cold spark of the snap closure of her shorts. She circled that wrist. I can't now because of my cycle, she said. Her cycle. I'd never heard a girl even mention her cycle. In my house, those things were kept secret. She pushed my hand away. She reached for my zipper, told me to lift my hips, and pulled my pants down. I leaned back on my elbows and knocked against the cooler again. The flashlight fell, and its light shone directly on Anita's face. I looked at her. She looked at me. After it was over, she spit into a handful of tissues and went outside the tent to smoke. I pulled my pants back up and went outside with her. I didn't know what to do. I said hello. A shout of victory rose from the fair. A hammered bell clapped through the trees. Anita offered me a cigarette. I put it in my pocket. I wonder what my stepdad is doing walking around by himself. Maybe planning to buy the place, she said. We're not rich. I mean, he's not. None of us are. He just likes to look like a tycoon. She lit her cigarette. My parents are weird. My dad can't sit at any table in the world with a shirt on. He's got to take it off. My mom's the school bus driver. I get on the bus and we pretend we don't know each other. She's a good person, though, very punctual. They're here somewhere. Me and Julie actually saw them sucking face on a bench in front of everybody. That's embarrassing. She squeezed my hand and asked me what a tycoon was. Julie and Emmett came along a path, holding hands and smiling. Time to go, I said to Emmett. It's close to 10. We said goodbye to Anita and Julie. Me and Emmett both hugged the other's girl. We promised we would write them letters, and we did. You're looking at a man who has just lost his virginity, Emmett said as we walked away. So what happened with you and Anita? Did you bang her? Shit, I said. I'll tell you later. But I couldn't resist telling him now. The night had turned out to be fun. I could think about Anita in the car in the dusky light of the back seat with Don, unaware, driving. She gave me head, I said. I can't wait to tell my dad about Julie, Emmett said. I promised him I would whenever it happened. When we got to the place where we were supposed to meet Don, he was already there, his arms folded across his chest, a pamphlet of some sort rolled up in one fist. Let's go, he said. We have to beat the crowd out of here. I could see bits of popcorn in his teeth, but at least his fly was up now. We got onto Interstate 91, but then traffic was stopped near Locksboro, all three southbound lanes. Red brake lights climbed the hill in tiers and dropped below a ridge. We waited 5 minutes while Don raced through the radio stations, hoping for a traffic report. Then he looked at his watch, pulled the car over to the shoulder, and got out. Stay put, guys, he said, and jogged ahead to see what the problem was. Me and Emmett got out of the car. Like, he's going to be able to do anything, I said. He can't even change a flat tire. Maybe I won't tell my dad what happened, Emmett said. I didn't wear a rubber. Did you pull out? Emmett laughed. I don't want to have a kid. I wouldn't come in her. I looked behind us down the highway. The cars were backed up now for about a half mile. My mom's going to be pissed, I said. My mom's always pissed, Emmett said. I remembered the egg. What was that thing your dad threw at the TV? Emmett shook his head. I don't know, some kind of sex toy. Do girls jerk off? I meant his mother. I pictured her with the egg shimmering in her long fingers and her lips puckered in a cherry coup. I guess so. What do they think about? They think about money, Emmett said. They think about chickens. Chickens. The egg, Emmett said. He put his hands on his crotch and made the same buzzing sound his father had. Some fat guy was walking towards us along the shoulder. He was wearing a T-shirt that said, Instant asshole, just add alcohol. Either of you motherfuckers have a rifle, he said. Motherfuckers, Emmett said. A rifle, kid, the guy said, or a pistol. There's a motherfucking bull running around on the highway up there. Some jackass was hauling it back to his hillbilly hidey hole and it broke out of the thingy. The what's-a-majig. It's running around like crazy. It's all crazy. Everything. I'm crazy. You're drunk, I said. Big deal, he said. You want to see it? It's up there. You think I'm crazy? Wait until you see that bull. He's horny, too. Get it? He spread his fingers out against the side of his head and started digging his feet into the gravel at the shoulder. Get the picture, you retards? Where are you from? Windfall, I said. Never heard of it. I've heard just about everything, but nobody's ever said the word windfall to me. You might as well be from Shittsville. Go check out the bull. We started walking up over the ridge. My legs were heavy. My sperm was in a tissue in the campgrounds. I imagined myself with bull's horns, those horns making it harder now to lift my head. About a quarter of a mile up the road, there was some guy swinging a lasso. He was standing beside a parked car. On the other side of the car was the bull. It stood there looking stupid and psyched out, like the guys on the football team who took steroids. That's your dad, Emmett said. It was Don, trying to lasso the bull. He started swinging the lasso above his head and then tossed it. He missed, and the bull started towards him. It began to lower its head. People were shouting. Don jumped up into the trailer, and the bull went to the guardrail and licked it. Don reeled in the rope, let the lasso fly again. It sailed in the air. Don jerked it a little, guiding it, and it landed around the bull's neck without even brushing the horns. He pulled the rope tight, then let out some slack from his end and tightened his grip. People honked their horns and flashed their lights on and off. He started tying his end of the rope to a steel ring inside the trailer. Just then the bull started running again away from the trailer and pulled the rope taut. But Don had tied the rope in time and the bull could only strain against it. He went up to the driver of the truck and told him something. The driver pulled ahead slowly, the broken trailer ramp dragging along the ground. The bull followed 20 feet behind, mesmerized by the sparks. People were still honking as we walked back to the car. Where'd you learn how to do that? Emmett asked. I worked on a ranch a few summers, paying off a debt. I never had to do anything like that, though. That was fun. We drove home listening to the radio. We were all thinking like you do on trips home from strange outings. The bull's horns were not white. Anita had white teeth. Her eye teeth were long. Don looked at me in the rearview mirror. Where'd you disappear to with those little sluts I saw you with? He asked. They had a tent, I said. They showed us their tent. And they weren't sluts. His eyes flashed up once more, and I knew that he suspected something. It wasn't a bad feeling. Then anybody knew what had happened with me and Anita, but Don knowing was different. I didn't like for him to know too much about me. and he looked suspicious. "Smells like you two have been drinking," he said. "I can smell it. I'm no idiot." We were going 90 miles an hour in order to get home in time for Mom to get to work. Don was breaking the law, driving over the speed limit by 35 miles an hour. "This is cool," Emmett said. It was easier for him to say that because he wouldn't get in any trouble. His dad didn't really care what he did. "You gonna tell my mom about the alcohol?" I finally asked Don as we neared the windfall exit. "We'll see," Don said. We all saw the state trooper at the same time. Don slowed down. The cop's red light swirled on. Don pulled off to the side of the road, waiting. He looked at his watch. "I heard cops don't give tickets to veterans," Emmett said to Don. "Just show me your military ID. The cop pulled over behind us and walked up to Don's window. "Got your license?" the cop said. He turned the flashlight on Don, then on me, then on Emmett. "You been drinking?" the cop asked. "No," Don said. He almost laughed. "But there do seem to be a number of problems." Suddenly, Don was shaking. The whole car was in a tremble. "I don't have my wallet," he explained to the cop. "I've got my registration and insurance, but my wallet's at home." Don got the papers from the glove box and handed them to the cop. He took them and checked the inspection sticker on the windshield. He was standing outside the window with the light on the papers. The car still shook. "You okay, sir?" "It's a little embarrassing," Don said. "Kind of a digestive crisis." The cop handed the forms back to Don. "What kind of crisis?" "Diarrhea," Don said. He was squirming around in the front seat, shaking his legs. That's why the car was swaying. "Diarrhea?" the cop asked. "That's the first time I've heard that one. If it was me, I'd just pull up to the side of the road and shit in the woods." "We're almost home now," Don said. "I can make it." Emmett and I weren't sure if Don was lying or not. The word diarrhea made me want again to throw up. The cop shone the light on my face. I tried to look away from it, but couldn't. "Those your sons?" the cop asked Don. "Nope," he said. "Well, whatever. I don't want to witness a man shitting himself," the cop said. "Consider this a Christmas gift." Then he walked back to his car without having given Don a ticket. Don took a few breaths and eased back onto the highway. He looked at his watch again. "I was thinking about the word, no. No, those aren't my sons." I suppose that had been the precise answer if one was allowed to say only yes or no. I thought about it for a few months. We got home by 10:40. I asked Emmett to come in for a while because I knew Don wouldn't mention anything about the drinking with Emmett there. It was a private family matter, a privacy that didn't exist at Emmett's house. Once, when I was there, his mother threw a screwdriver at his father. It stuck blade first into the drywall above his shoulder, and he took off his ball cap and hung it on the grip. Don ran upstairs to the bathroom. Me and Emmett sat on the sofa in the living room. Mom had her nurse's uniform up, her hair pinned up. "You won't believe what happened," Emmett said to her. She looked at me. I pretended not to know what Emmett was talking about. At his house, you can tell everybody you just got a blowjob. You throw vibrators at TV referees. You drink and fight and talk, but not here. "Nothing happened," I said. "Nothing?" Emmett asked. "Oh, my God. Mr. Harlenberg lassoed a bull right on the freeway. He saved the day." He started waving his arms like he was swinging a lasso. I thought he must have been drunk. Then he bullshitted a cop and got us out of a ticket. "Don?" Mom said. Then she looked at me and silently mouthed the same question, her eyebrows stricked, amazed above her eyes. "Don?" Then Don came down from the bathroom. He told Mom the story without giving himself much credit. "All in a day's work," he said. He handed her the brochure he'd gotten at the fair. "These people are going to open an arts and crafts store here soon," he said. "I told them we'd give them some business. I know you like that stuff." "Speaking of business, Mom said, "I'm going to be late." She kissed him on the cheek. Then she came over to kiss me. I held my breath but pretended not to. "Were you drinking?" she asked. I was about to say no. "I gave them a little sip from a flask," Don said. "Barely a thimbleful." Now Mom was even more confused. Don rarely drank. He didn't carry a flask. He was, it seemed, without vice. But he'd started a lie, and now he'd have to follow up on it. The two of them exchanged some look. She glanced at me. "We'll talk about this later," she said. It wasn't clear whether she was talking to me or to Don. Then she left. Emmett was looking at the arts and crafts brochure. Something in the pictures must have made him think of comfort, of wonderful domestic life. "Can I stay over here tonight?" he asked. I looked at Don. It was okay with him. "Thanks," I said. "I mean, thanks for taking us, too." "No problem," he said. "But I don't want you fucking things up for your mom and me, you little white trash piece of shit." He smacked me on the shoulder and went upstairs to watch TV in his and mom's bedroom. It hurt where he hit me. I rubbed it there. Emmett ran across the street to get a sleeping bag and his toothbrush. I lay in bed, my mouth still watering. I thought of Anita, the kisses, the schnapps. Her middle name was Clover. My head spun. The TV was loud. I remembered the egg, Anita's eye teeth, the look in Don's eyes when he smacked me. I ran to the bathroom and threw up in the toilet, on the toilet seat, on the floor, and on myself. I could hear Don pacing the hall, swinging an imaginary lasso with which he intended to reel me in, preparing to let me know that it was my fucking mess. I'd have to clean it all up. I knew he wouldn't help me unless I asked, and I didn't ask. Thanks.